discussed in that previous class.
Every time doing the link to what's to come, and take care of which is realistic, which is deserved, and just giving you the essence of the Bible time, which is the goal is to achieve this trust, this Krishna, and then this service in our relationships. Mm. And we have the verses that show you how Krishna deals with his devotees, how he reciprocates.
We started this chapter of Dhanandi Krishna, the God among us, and Krishna. This is fighting with Mathura, the Khasa. After seeing the black outside body, we should see the parents, and the his family. We had doubt initially that our children were. So the Khasa wanted the children in front of him, now they got him. But they were scared in the beginning. But to satisfy them, they tried him.
Any other points?
We also discussed at the arena where the fighting was taking place. Different people saw Krishna and Balarama in different modes. Like Kamsa looked Krishna and Balarama as a dad, and his devotees, his coward boys see him as a friend, and devotees see him as a cupid. And so different people are looking at them with different rasas, excluding Kamsa.
Kamsa also had rasa with Krishna. His was fear. Kasa. So he was seeing Krishna as death personified. So he also had a rasa with Krishna. But it was indirect rasa.
I'm aware it's called road rivers. Is that the word for fear? Road rivers.
Road
rivers.
You look at if you look at the nectar of devotion, it will say which of the rasas was connected to Kamsa. It mentions it was Krishna. Yeah, he was feeling great for you. Any other points?
Lord Krishna himself took a spiritual master, Sandipani Muni, and therefore sets an example for all conditioning entities to also go down that path of being born by spiritual master.
Very good. Any other points?
To add to that, I think we discussed how Krishna sets the perfect example in all each and every one of his pastimes. He sets the perfect example.
Last part. Anything else?
Intense fear can exist even in devotional service. There is intense fear for a fellow devotee.
Everybody can take shelter of Krishna, even a person who is an untouchable or lower caste. Krishna marries those princesses who are kidnapped. Proves that everybody can take shelter.
Also, Krishna doesn't like to see his devotees suffering, but he will chastise them if he has to, just to correct them and bring them back to him, like Duryodhana, breaking his skull. So we see in the first chapter, what is the first chapter called?
Questions
by Vidura. So Vidura developed a renounced temperament right in the very beginning of the third canto of the Bhagavatam, because Duryodhana spoke to him very harshly within his kingdom. He was one of his family members. And it was improper for Duryodhana to speak to a family member in a very harsh manner, especially if that family member is a senior personality and a very respected personality within the family. But he spoke to him in a very harsh manner. So immediately Vidura saw this as being Krishna's arrangement. And Prabhupada mentions within the purports in that section in the beginning of the first chapter, a devotee is always in a renounced temperament. So therefore he's always feeling a spirit of renunciation, regardless of which varna, which ashram he is in. So immediately when he had the opportunity, he saw it as Krishna's mercy and Krishna's arrangement that he could now renounce material life altogether. So then he went on pilgrimage. Instead of directly approaching Krishna, who was personally present on the planet at this point in time. Vidura travelled to the holy place as pilgrimage in order to increase his sukriti, or his piety, or his devotion, and purify himself from the contamination that he had experienced in the association of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and so forth, so that he could then approach Krishna directly.
It was also in Dwapara that temple worship was the way to go, like how it's Sankirtan, so probably is that the reason that he went to temple?
Like that, but also because even in Kali Yuga we go to the holy places and we go to the temples, like that, although it is the prescribed Yuga Dharma of that time. But he needed to purify his consciousness. And that's the same as we do today. We go to holy places like Vrindavan and Mayapur and Jagannath Puri to purify our consciousness, to see the deities there. Same principle. So then he began to travel, but then during his travels he met the great devotee of Krishna, Uddhava, who was a great associate of Krishna himself. And in Uddhava's association, he begins to ask him. He feels great pain in separation from Krishna. Both of them are feeling great pain in separation from Krishna. So he does not directly ask about Krishna in terms of Krishna's disappearing from this world, because he knows that Krishna has disappeared from this world. So he begins to ask about Krishna and the Yadu dynasty, the members of the Yadu dynasty, in terms of his relationship with them. How are they? How are they faring? Is Krishna well? Are the other Yadus, are they well? So Prabhupada explains this is because of his psychological state. It's very shocking to find out that someone who is very close to you has passed away. So because Lord Krishna, who is the life of his life, and the Yadu dynasty, Krishna's eternal associates, have passed away, he feels too much pain to directly ask about them. So he's asking indirectly. But then, in the beginning, at the end of the first chapter, then he says to Uddhava, please chant the glories of Krishna. I want to hear about Krishna. So this is the system of purification. Whether Krishna is personally present or whether we are separated from Krishna, whatever the situation is, the process of purification is to hear and chant about Krishna. That is the process of how one becomes purified. So because he is separated from Krishna, Prabhupada explains, there is no difference from being with Krishna personally or being separated from Krishna. If one is absorbed in hearing and chanting, then one has Krishna's association directly, even though he may be externally not present. But wherever you hear and chant about Krishna, Krishna becomes manifest at that place. So he asks Uddhava, please begin to glorify Krishna. In the beginning of the second chapter, what is the second chapter called?
Remembrance
of Lord Krishna. So in the beginning of that chapter, then Uddhava goes into a very deep state of consciousness, a very deep state of trance. And actually, Srila Prabhupada explains, for a pure devotee, and Prabhupada is saying this out of realization, because this was Prabhupada's own situation, for a pure devotee, they are actually with Krishna in the spiritual world, simultaneously while they appear to be with us within this material realm. So Uddhava, he was feeling, actually he was directly in contact with Krishna, directly in association with Krishna. And in order to answer Vidura's questions, he brought his consciousness from the spiritual world in Dwarka with Krishna back to this material world in order to reciprocate with Uddhava, with Vidura, in order to answer his questions. So then he begins to speak about Krishna and glorifies Krishna's position between verses, say, like 7 and 15. And then he begins to speak about Krishna's pastimes, remembrance of Lord Krishna. The second chapter is called Remembrance of Lord Krishna. So he begins to speak about Krishna's pastimes. After establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, this is very... within the beginning prayers of the... when Uddhava begins to speak in the second chapter, he very much establishes Krishna's supremacy. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. His position as being Bhagavan, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he establishes his position, the correct Siddhanta, so that everyone hearing the Bhagavatam and reading the Bhagavatam will understand Krishna as he is. right, without confusion. That everyone understands this is the Supreme Lord. It is Godhead Himself, the personality of Godhead Himself, who we are dealing with in this point in time. And then he begins to describe his different pastimes, which are very sweet pastimes, like that. And then, near the end of the chapter, he begins to describe Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Now, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are very unique, and this is the full display of Godhead, as Prabhupada explains within the purports. Because within the pastimes of Krishna within Vrindavan, what is the purpose of Krishna performing his leela? Why does Krishna perform leela, pastime? Why does God perform leela? Yeah, to reciprocate with devotees, like that, to give pleasure to the devotees. So therefore he performs leela, or pastimes, in order to give pleasure to his bhaktas, or his devotees. So he begins, within the end of the second chapter, describes that Krishna reciprocates with the devotees in Vrindavan in such a way, because the devotees in Vrindavan do not have any sense of Krishna's Aishwarya or Krishna's opulence. In other words, they do not have any sense of his godliness, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They simply see him in terms of their eternal rasa with him, in terms of being a cowherd boy, being a friend, in terms of being a lover, in terms of being a son, like that. They see him in this relationship. So in that way, they don't have any sense of his godliness or his supremacy. But Uddhava has just established a few verses before that he is supreme. It should not be forgotten. But then when we see the Vrindavan pastimes, we should not become confused, as Lord Brahma did in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He saw Krishna acting just as a cowherd boy, and he became confused by the pastime, and then he thought that this personality is just an ordinary boy. Same as Indra. Indra had this same defect. He thought Krishna was just an ordinary boy. But Uddhava has established that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So even though the pastimes of Vrindavan appear to be human-like, actually, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And this is his leela, his reciprocation with his devotees. And it is based on Madhurya. Madhurya means sweetness. They're very sweet pastimes, very charming pastimes, very natural pastimes, very human-like pastimes. Because the devotees in Vrindavan have this rasa, or this feeling towards Krishna. So Krishna is simply reciprocating with the devotees according to their bhava, or their feeling towards him. Okay. Then in the third chapter is called? The Lord's pastime out of Vrindavan. Right? So then we go into his pastimes when he leaves Vrindavan and goes to Mathura, like that. And in these pastimes we see a mixture of Krishna's godliness and his Madhurya feature. In other words, the Aishwarya and the Madhurya are somewhat mixed in his pastimes of Mathura and Dwarka. For example, he has 16,108 wives. Right? So it's very opulent, a great display of Aishwarya, a great display of power. A great display of his godliness. But at the same time, there is a certain amount of madhurya, or sweetness, within the pastime simultaneously. Because Krishna's wives in Dwarka are relating to him in a very sweet and loving and natural way. As are all the residents of Dwarka. But still there is a consciousness or an awareness of his supremacy. Now there's a mixture there, right, of Aishwarya and madhurya, like that. Whereas in, we can open windows if everyone sees up there hot. Devotees are too hot then.
We've got some birds living out from this window. So
what's that?
Some pigeons living out.
Then tell them to go.
Everyone's a business.
Just ask them to come in and sit down. Or ask them to go. The devotees need cool air. How does Indra forget he's the Supreme Lord?
Yes.
So that can be sometimes, just like in Lord Brahma's case, it was that Lord Brahma was under the influence of Krishna's yogamaya potency to facilitate the pastime. So with Indra, there could be, we'd have to look at the commentaries, but there could be some influence of Krishna himself there in order to facilitate the pastime. Or, actually, Prabhupada mentions, you mean in terms of when they went to
Parijata?
Yeah. So Prabhupada mentions there, it wasn't Yogamaya, it was that he was influenced by his material circumstance. What's that?
He called him Hempet.
Prabhupada called him a fool. Prabhupada said he's a fool. Like that. Because he became too much influenced by the wife. Like that. And this is a lesson. The lesson is that we should not listen to anyone above and beyond our spiritual master and Krishna. I remember one time we were in France, in Paris. I was with my spiritual master, Tuan Krishna Maharaj, and we were having a darshan with my godbrothers and godsisters, and he glorified one of my godbrothers, Ekachakraprabhu. He said, he is such a good servant of mine. I've never had a better servant than him. He's such a good servant. So he gave me nice glorification. But then a few minutes later, his wife, who was a very strong personality, she was speaking to him during the darshan. They were at the back, but she was kind of speaking to him. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he chastised him. He said, are you listening to the guru or are you listening to the wife? So this is the point. The point is that we should listen to Krishna, guru and Krishna first. Right? And then other personalities secondary. Not that the other personalities become our predominating deity. Because then you will have problems. So what happened to Indra? Who did he listen to? Sachi, the wife. And when he listened to the wife, then he had conflict with Krishna. So he should not have challenged Krishna like that. So this was the lesson within the pastime. Isn't it?
In the Krishna book it is said that it is because of the pride that Indra was in the world of ignorance. Because of that he forgot that Krishna is the supreme personality. And for the some time he thought that he is the controller.
Yeah.
So because of that type pastime.
Yeah.
So if Krishna wanted to break his pride.
And then the second time, not long after that, Krishna went to the heavenly planets and he did the same thing again, similar thing again. So this is because covered by the modes of material nature to some degree, like that. So then it is described Krishna's different pastimes outside of Vrindavan, where it is described there is a mixture of Krishna's opulence and Krishna's sweetness, which is there. But as compared to Vrindavan, we're seeing in this section of the Bhagavatam, the opening section of the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, it is giving us a preview of what will take place in the tenth canto. Because in the tenth canto of the Bhagavatam, it will describe Krishna's pastimes in great detail. In Vrindavan, it is, Prabhupada has explained to us what it is like in Vrindavan, and what a Krishna is like in Vrindavan, and what the relationship with Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan is like. And then similarly, what Krishna's pastimes are like outside of Vrindavan. So we're getting a feeling of what this is like at this point in time. Any questions? Or?
You can ask me something?
Yeah.
I said that they shouldn't listen to the devotees.
Said what?
The wife is putting them in Krishna consciousness and they are not doing practicing properly. Or they should listen to the...
Say it again.
If the wife is more advanced than the husband and she is putting the husband in Krishna consciousness, then should the husband listen to Krishna or the
Do you want to answer?
You're going to have a shot. I'll back you up.
Then, in general, the husband and wife should be cooperative. Right? The husband, in a Vedic context, the husband has direct association with the guru. In a Vedic context, the wife does not have direct association with the guru. Although in this day and age, it is a little different. Therefore, in the Vedic context, it says that the husband is called... Gurupati. Gurupati. It means that the husband is considered to be... Because the husband is directly associating with the guru. And then as the guru instructs the husband... Then the husband instructs the wife. So the wife sees the husband as Guru Pati, which means husband guru. Yeah, he's the guru for the wife. Because she will not directly approach the guru so much in the Vedic. Although it's different now.
Yeah, women never used to speak to the guru in those days.
Yeah, in those days. Although now it's different. Right. And the wife is known as Dharma Patni. Right? Which means she follows Dharma and she supports the husband. Right? In his spiritual practices, devotional practices. Right? So that's traditionally how it would work. Now it may be different now. Because Kali Yuga is very mixed. And the women are different and the men are different, like that. So the point is that in the partnership of marriage, in Grihastha Ashram, then the husband and wife should help each other to become Krishna conscious. One may be stronger than the other. Sometimes the husband is stronger, sometimes the wife is stronger. Whoever is stronger should lift the other one up. But everything should be based on the order of the spiritual master. Like that. Does that answer? Is that okay?
Okay. No, I'm not talking about
it. I don't know. So tonight we begin with the verse. Any particular verse you like?
15.
Okay. So now for the remainder of this chapter, it will be described Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, also. Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. So we get more understanding of Krishna's pastimes, and we also get more understanding of Krishna's pastimes, and as we explained before, there are many lessons which Krishna instructs within his pastimes. So Krishna does many things simultaneously. So within his pastimes, you'll see there are great lessons to be learned, instructions which are given within his pastimes, explicitly and implicitly, like that. So as soon as we look through the remainder of the pastimes, we'll see many lessons coming up. When they quarrel, now, this is, we'll read the previous verse also, because this is connected. This is Krishna himself speaking. After the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, the Lord said, "The abatement of the earth's great burden, 18 Akshahinis, has now been effected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna and Bhima. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Yadu dynasty, born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden." So sometimes you'll hear it in the Bhagavatam, it says that the Yadu dynasty were a burden to the earth. But if you read the purport, this particular purport, it describes the Yadu dynasty are not a burden like the warriors on the Battle of Kurukshetra were. There are many warriors who were on the Battle of Kurukshetra, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they were a great burden to the earth because they were impious Kshatriyas. No? But the Yadu dynasty are the Lord's eternal associates. So how can they be a burden? So I think Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they describe that the Yadu dynasty were a burden of love. That's secondary. Like that. But they were a burden of love. Which means that sometimes we have to carry a burden. Just like if you have a child, it is a burden to have a child. Huh? Does anyone have children here? Right? Is it a burden?
Yes,
it's not.
Yes,
it's not. Why is it? Why is it not a burden? No. What's that?
Affectionate relation to us.
Okay. So therefore, would you call it a burden of love?
Yes. Yeah.
Is that a good description?
No.
Very, very good mother.
Very tolerant.
Wisha, your children are older, so.
Oh yes. Still, they're a burden.
Especially in teenagers.
Especially in teenagers. Just wait, when they get older, then you'll see. Maybe not.
No, but they're burdened, but we tolerate it because we love them so much. We
yeah,
do it
like
together.
That. So therefore, it's a burden of love.
You
yes. Right. So we'll see that this is the way it's described by the Acharyas. That the Yadu dynasty was a burden of love for the earth. The earth was feeling great pleasure to have the Yadus, even though there were hundreds of thousands of millions of Yadus, members of the dynasty, but the earth was feeling it was a burden of love. Huh? There were so many there on the earth, and the earth had to supply so much opulence in order to facilitate the Yadus, right? Such a big population. But this burden was a burden of love. She was pleased to do it. Okay. So Krishna was thinking, how do I get rid of this burden? It's not a burden in the negative sense. It's a burden in the positive connotation. It's not a negative thing. Whereas the soldiers on the battle of Kurukshetra, the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord was feeling, or the earth was feeling, these personalities are actually a burden. I need them rid from the surface of the earth. But the Adonis was a different feeling like that. And also, as Merle Prabhu pointed out, that the earth was also feeling the separation from the Yadu dynasty would also be a great burden, right, in the future. And Krishna knew that the earth would feel great separation from him and from. And at this point in time, even to now, because it's only been 5,000 years, which is not a very long time, the earth is feeling great separation from Krishna and from the Yadu dynasty. Right there.
Cool. In this context, can we think that Krishna knew the future, that the others were going to fight each other and kill themselves, and this may be a very painful for Mother Earth, and she may not be liking it?
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Or in general, just the fact that they would leave her surface, they would all disappear, this would be a great burden for her. Like that. So same thing. Okay, so now the first verse for tonight. When they quarrel among themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking madhu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise, it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. So, Prabhupada explains within the purport that the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty was the arrangement of Krishna. It was his Yogamaya potency. It was not that the Yadu dynasty disappeared in an inauspicious manner. It may seem very inauspicious that they all fought amongst themselves as members of the dynasty. They quarreled amongst themselves and they killed each other. It doesn't sound very auspicious. Right? If we hear of a family fighting each other to the death, killing each other, it doesn't sound very auspicious. But there was nothing inauspicious about this situation because it was factually an arrangement by Krishna. Because he understood there was no one else on earth who could rid the Yadu dynasty from earth. There was no one who could in the universe who could destroy them. Because they were personally protected by Lord Krishna himself. And they were Krishna's eternal associates. And Krishna's eternal associates are practically as powerful as Krishna himself. Just like in the pastime of Agasura, which demon was Agasura?
Snake demon.
Big snake. How big was he?
How big? Tall as the clouds.
Yeah, when he opened his mouth, right, his mouth was going up to the clouds. Right, that's a big snake.
Huge.
That's a huge snake. So then, when Krishna saw this, right, there was no fear. Although he felt some fear temporarily because of Yogamaya, like the pastime potency. But the acharyas described that the cowherd boys, who are Krishna's eternal associates, each one of them was powerful enough themselves to destroy Aga, to destroy the snake demon. Right? Each one of them could have killed him themselves. That's how powerful Krishna's associates are. Krishna's associates, his pure devotees, are practically as powerful as he is. Practically. So who could remove the Yadu dynasty from the earth? So the Lord had to arrange this pastime so that they would be removed. So Prabhupada explains it was just like a magician's trick. Right? Sometimes the magician will play some trick, do some magical feat, and then everyone will be believing that it actually took place. But it factually did not really happen. So in a similar way, Prabhupada describes that the Yadu dynasty appeared to kill each other. But they could not kill each other because they're all eternal. The Krishna's eternal associates. So it was just like a, how do you say it? Like a mirage.
Drama.
Yeah, like a what?
Drama.
Like a drama, yeah. Or like a mirage. Or an illusion. Right? It was not actually taking place. Right? It just appeared to have happened. But factually speaking, there was no actual bloodshed or anything like this. It was just the Lord's arrangement for his associates to go. The Prabhupada explains within the purport that the pure devotees, they are always surrendered to the Lord's will. So that each one of them understood this was the Lord's desire. So to cooperate with the Lord's desire, they all took part in this seeming, like this apparent battle. Because they understood this is the Lord's arrangement for us to all leave this earth now. So even the pure devotees, they are willing to do things which are seemingly unfavorable if it pleases the Lord. And what is the best example of this that we have in our tradition? Someone who did something which is apparently unfavorable to please the Lord. There are many examples, but...
Yudhishthira Maya.
Yeah, that's a good example. The one I was thinking of mainly is the Bhagavad Gita itself. Was Arjuna. Right? Did something which appeared to be unfavorable. Had to kill the own family. Right? But he understood this was Krishna's will. So he surrendered to the activity because he understood this would give pleasure to Krishna. So this is the situation of the pure devotees. Any questions or comments so far?
So I just asked the same question last week.
Yeah.
Text 14 and text 14, is the Lord talking to himself or talking to someone else?
Is the Lord talking to himself or to someone else? I'm not sure. But it does say there, doesn't it say that the Lord speaks to himself?
Yes, the Lord says, it looks like it's continuous talking.
Yeah. And it says
then,
till the next one, it means that
the
he's only saying.
Then it says afterwards that he was thinking to himself.
Yeah, it says in the third one, doesn't it?
And the next verse says, the Lord says, thinking to himself.
Where verse is that?
Text 16 says.
Oh, text 16. Yeah, I knew it said so. So yeah, it says the Lord was thinking to himself, so it's not clear whether he was speaking to one of his associates or it doesn't mention specific. Any other points? Okay. Lord Sri Krishna, thus thinking to himself, established Maharaj Yudhishthira in the possession, in the position of supreme controller of the world in order to show the ideal of administration on the path of piety. The embryo of Puru's descendant begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burned by the weapon of the son of Drona. But later he was again protected by the Lord. So remember this pastime coming from the first canto?
Yes.
In which chapter?
Seven.
What is seven called?
Drona or son of
the son of Drona punished. So in the seventh chapter of the first canto, it describes this pastime of how Ashwatthama sent the Brahmastra towards Parikshit within the womb, like that. And it describes here that actually he was burnt by the Brahmastra weapon. But then Krishna appeared within the womb and gave him a second body, gave him a second form. And he showed that same form to Parikshit. He showed his eternal form to Parikshit. And then the word Parikshit, or the name Parikshit, literally means
examiner.
So he saw Krishna within the womb. He saw Krishna's eternal Satchidananda Vigraha form, his beautiful form. And then when he left the womb, and then he was searching his whole life for that same person who he'd seen within the womb, Lord Krishna. So this is Krishna's all-powerful nature. That Parikshit, his embryo was destroyed, his body was destroyed. And Krishna re-established, or gave him another form, gave him another body. And then simultaneously, he appeared within the womb so the Pariksha could see his eternal form, right? In a very small form. Krishna appeared within the womb and then gave him darshan like that. So this is Krishna's all-powerful nature. How can you do something like that?
Is that the same case with all souls inside pregnant womb of the mother?
That they get destroyed by a Brahmastra.
No, they see Krishna because when we get out, I've read somewhere that that's why the baby comes out crying and for the rest of the life searches for happiness.
That's later in the third canto. If you look in chapters, I think it's around chapter 29 or so of the third canto, it describes, Kapila Dev describes the embryo within the womb. And it says at the age of 7 months, after 7 months of being in the womb, the embryo wakes, or the baby, the fetus, who's quite developed by 7 months, then he wakes up. At that time he becomes quite conscious from 7 to 9. Last 2 months the baby is quite conscious. And then at that time, he begins to pray to Krishna. Not that he sees Krishna, he begins to pray to Krishna. If you get me out of this, right, I promise I'll be your devotee.
But next one again, only the devotee.
But usually they have some fingers crossed.
But Prabhupada
does
not all the
souls
pray like that?
Not all of them pray like that. But it's mentioned it's quite common that a pious soul will pray like that. Does that answer the question? Okay. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform 3 horse sacrifices. And Maharaj Yudhishthira, constantly following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that the leaders are meant to follow Krishna's plan to take everyone in the country back to Godhead. And this is the actual position of a leader. The leader is meant, or the supreme personality within the government, is meant to set the example for all the citizens so that they will be inspired to go back to Godhead. Why? Because that is Krishna's desire. Krishna desires that every living entity in this material world go back to Godhead, go back to the spiritual world. So the leaders are meant to set the example for everyone within the country. That they will become inspired to go back to the spiritual world, to follow spiritual life very seriously. Now, if they do not do that, they violate the law of God. They misuse their position. In other words, they are not qualified to be in that position. So then they become known as Dwija Bandhu, which means they may be a kshatriya by name, but they are not kshatriya by quality. They don't actually have the qualification for that. So they misuse their position, and they have to receive, Prabhupada explains within the Bhagavatam as it goes along, that the supreme person within each country, he has to accept 1/6 of the piety and 1/6 of the sin of the entire kingdom. So you can imagine, right now, being the president of the United States of America. Right? You get 1/6 of all the piety, and you get 1/6 of all the sin. Right? And we know at this point in time there was a lot of sin being committed on earth. So it is not an enviable position. No one, it's not something you'd want to go into if you knew actually what was going to happen to you, right? At the end of your life, right? If you knew what your next life would be, right? That you'd have to receive the reactions, 1/6 of the reactions for the entire population at the time that you were the head of the government. It's not a very enviable position. And Prabhupada points out that if the king and the citizens do follow Krishna's instructions, if the king sets the example and the citizens follow, then the earth will give unlimited bounty, unlimited wealth, unlimited opulence. There'll be no shortage. It's described within the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam, yeah, at that time, and also in the 9th canto of the Ramachandra. It describes when Lord Ramachandra was on the planet that it only rained during the night time. Right? And during the daytime, the skies were always clear. Now we can't get it to rain any time. Okay, now we're in a drought. Right? What is this drought caused by? Sin. Impiety. Because the leader and the citizens are not following the laws of God. Right? So if you want to solve the problem, right, then simply you begin to follow the laws of God, and then the earth will supply everything naturally. And in perfect order and perfect harmony. Like this. But because they do not follow, then this is the situation.
Also, in the time of Ramachandra, everyone could die whenever they wanted.
They don't need to die.
No untimely death.
And the Bhagavad Gita mentioned that's why the big leaders, they become sick or they get killed, murdered.
Assassinated.
Mm.
Also, Winston Churchill, after he, when he began to die, when he was leaving this body, he went into a coma for 10 days. No? And Prabhupada commented, I think, that that Yamaraj's assistants were calculating all the reactions. So it took them 10 days just to work out. When they had to add it all up, like that. And then when they added it up, then they took his soul from his body and took him to Yamaraj, like that, and said, okay, now we have it all the information. Like that. Now you have to decide what to do with him. Like that. So.
In that case, all these Bhushanas will have been coma for years.
They've been what?
It could happen to Winston Churchill, that he was in a coma for 10 days, they had to take 10 days.
Yeah.
For Bush and other people, it could take years.
Maybe they started adding up already.
This issue of reaction, does it apply to only heads of governments, or could it be just any head of family or head of a company?
It would seem like that. It would seem like that. Yeah, it would seem. It would seem that, I remember Ami Ruta Prabhu said to me one day, he said, some of the stuff that's happening in my life is not due to me. Right? It is obviously due to, you know, if devotees who are following the leader are misbehaving. Even Srila Prabhupada said, if you look in the Lilamrita, I think it's 1975, I can't remember which year, but Prabhupada gets very sick at one point in time. And Prabhupada makes the comments in the Lilamrita that the reason this is happening is because most of my leaders are not following the four regulative principles or following their vows at initiation, it might have been. So maybe they weren't chanting 16 rounds and so forth. So therefore, the reactions do go to the, yes, they do go to the head of the family or the head of the company or the head of the temple or the head of the...
You were mentioning the problem that we were having with the drought. Now, as devotees, if we try our bit, it might improve slightly, but as a whole, it's probably not going to improve vastly. Where's the situation going to go? A very, very practical standpoint.
Yeah, level 5 water restrictions. That's where it's going. That's it. If there's not an improvement in the piety, in other words, if the earth remains impious, then you see the description in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, that the earth becomes more and more unpleasant to live upon. So we'll see that the drought will continue. We'll see that the global warming situation will worsen. Just like at the moment, they're speaking about in Europe, the European leaders of the EU, at least the departmental heads and so forth, they got together last week and they said they want to minimise the global warming situation. So they set their target by 2020, right, which is another like 13 years from now. Then we want to have this much, you know. So it's not really a very serious, you know, situation. You know, I mean, if you're saying, you know, I mean, if the situation is very serious now, which it does seem to be, and you're saying within 13 years we want to reach this goal, it's not really a very serious commitment. So in other words, it's indicative that they don't really want to give up their sinful activities to a great degree. They don't want to modify their sinful lifestyle to a great degree. So if they don't do that, then the reactions will just come.
But they're also ignorant, they don't know. But they're also ignorant, they don't know actually what's the real cause for all the problems.
They may not know it, but that doesn't mean that the reactions will not come.
Mm.
Just like Prabhupada says, you put your hand in fire, then fire will burn. Like that. You may say, well, you know, I don't think it will burn. It doesn't make a
difference.
Ignorance
doesn't make sense. That's why whatever they do, it won't because
yes.
They don't address the
life. Yeah, the point. Simultaneously, the personality of Godhead enjoyed life in the city of Dwarka, strictly in conformity with the Vedic customs of society. He was situated in detachment and knowledge as enunciated by the Sankhya system of philosophy.
Mm.
So this is a very interesting purport. Did anyone read this purport? Hands up if you read this purport. Very good. 4 of you. Very good. So I would advise that the other 22 of you or so would also read this book. It would be very good for your Krishna consciousness to read this purport. Okay. So Prabhupada mentions within
definitely
the purport.
Example.
What's that?
We'll definitely read the purport exam.
Yeah. Six of the questions on the exam will be based on this purport. So please read this purport. So Krishna taught every. It's a very interesting purport, the way Prabhupada explains that it's the philosophy of the Bhagavata. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Jane Yasu Vairagyam Jnanam Chahat Ohoitukam. So the Bhagavatam describes in the second chapter of the first canto that Bhakti Yoga will automatically breed or automatically give rise to Jnana and Vairagya. When you perform Bhakti or devotional service, you will develop knowledge or realization about Krishna. By performing Bhakti, realizations come. We all experience this. The more devotion we do, the more realizations we get. And vairagya. It means you become disinterested in material life. The more you do devotional service, you become disinterested in the material world. Right? So Prabhupada explains in the purport that Krishna taught how to live in this world based on these principles of jnana and vairagya. Krishna was very much dedicated to establishing these principles within the world. In other words, he established jnana within this world. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita, right, and many other instructions. The third and fourth canto are actually spoken by Krishna, right, to Uddhava and Maitreya. The 11th canto is spoken to, a great part of it is spoken to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita, like that. The Bhagavad Gita itself. So there are many instructions given by Krishna. The Krishna is giving the world divya jnana, or transcendental knowledge. That is one of his missions within this world. And he teaches the world through his own example. As a grihastha within Dwarka, he's surrounded by unlimited opulence. Opulence that we cannot even understand or estimate. How opulent Krishna's situation was as he lived within this world in Dwarka. Yet, Krishna showed complete vairagya. Or complete detachment from this world. Right? Krishna was never in the spirit of sense enjoyment. His acting as the prince of Dwarka was based on the principle of detachment and renunciation. And he was teaching that example to everyone within this world. So therefore Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gives one verse in relation to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself with the same mission as Krishna. Bhakti. How does it go? Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogena. The Lord, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says that Lord Chaitanya's mission of establishing Bhakti Yoga within this world is very much enriched with Vairagya Vidya, which means renunciation of knowledge. This is a part of our Vaishnava culture. Vaishnavas, or followers of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they must develop these two qualities as part of our culture of cultivating our devotional lives. We must cultivate knowledge about Krishna. And that is the whole purpose of our study, right? Of our course, right? The Bhakti Shastri, the Bhakti Vaibhav courses, and the Bhakti Vedanta, the Bhakti Sarvabhauma courses, which will be taught in the future, which are being taught now even in Vrindavan. Guruji Prabhu has already begun to teach these things. So the whole purpose of this is to deepen the devotee's jnana, or the devotee's transcendental knowledge, which will enrich one's devotion. The more you study about Krishna, the more you become absorbed in divya jnana, or transcendental knowledge about Krishna, the more your devotion to Krishna will be enriched, or will grow. And similarly, the more you develop your transcendental knowledge about Krishna, the more you become disinterested in this material world. So Krishna was establishing these principles in his own pastimes. And the devotees, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, they should follow this mood, right, in our devotional lives. We should cultivate this mood of cultivating knowledge and practicing renunciation, detachment. There's no use in being a devotee. I mean, it's not that there's no use, but if we're a very serious devotee, we cannot, as Prabhupada said in the second canto, that spiritual life and sense gratification go ill together. Right? So you can study and you can chant and you can do all of these things, but then if you have too much material opulence, right, then something is wrong in the equation. It means that something is imbalanced in the equation. It means the bhakti is not going deep enough. So the mood should be like that. So this was the mood established by Krishna. Even though he was the prince of Dwarka, he was the most opulent person in the world, but he was detached. He was not a sense enjoyer. Yeah, nice slogan. Yeah. Queen Kunti says.
Good education, body, opulence, and cannot approach with Lord with sincere feeling.
Very good. Nice. Any questions, guys?
What was the first part? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya.
It starts off Vairagya Vijit Nija Bhakti Yogena. That's the beginning of it, so it should be there. Yeah. Okay. Verse 20.
In the early stages, I've been told that it's permissible to eat prasadam, you know, big bounty, because, you know, that's a good way to enhance your spiritual movement forward. So when do you say, okay, now I need to stop, this is starting to become sense enjoyment and not a spiritual?
So that comes from Prabhupada, that's Prabhupada's instruction. So Prabhupada said for the first 6 months, you should eat so much prasadam that you waddle like a duck. So fill yourself up with prasadam for the first 6 months. But then after that, then Prabhupada says, then you have to begin to practice some sense control. It cannot become like that. But for the first 6 months, you should purify your consciousness by taking prasadam. And it will help to control your senses. Because you're giving up so much sense gratification. So, who's making noises? Because you're giving up sense gratification. So therefore, by taking prasadam will help you to control your senses in the beginning. Like that. But it should not continue unlimited. There has to be some restraint, some sense control. First 6 months you have license. Prabhupada gave you blessing. How long have you been here?
A month and a half.
Please enjoy yourself. He was there in his transcendental body, the residence of the goddess of fortune, and his usual gentle and sweet smiling face, with his usual gentle and sweet smiling face, his nectarian words and his flawless character. The Lord enjoyed his pastimes, both in this world and in other worlds, higher planets, specifically in the association of the Yadu dynasty. At leisure hours of by night, he enjoyed the friendship of conjugal love with women. So when it says here that Krishna enjoyed the pleasure of conjugal love with women, this means with his wives. It doesn't mean just with any woman like that. But it meant with his wife. But Prabhupada points out within the purports that these wives of Krishna are expansions of Krishna's internal pleasure potency. In other words, the original expansion of Lord Krishna's pleasure potency is Srimati Radharani. And from Srimati Radharani comes unlimited gopis within Vrindavan. And then when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, or you can say when Krishna expands outside of Vrindavan into Dwarka, then at that time when Krishna expands as outside of Vrindavan into Dwarka, into Vasudeva Krishna, like that, then at that time Srimati Radharani expands as Satyabhama to accompany him. Right? And Chandravali, who is Radharani's main rival within Vrindavan, she expands as Rukmini within Dwarka. Right? So these wives of Krishna are Krishna's own internal pleasure potency. And the purpose of Krishna's internal pleasure potency is to give pleasure to Krishna. Like that. Right? So there is an exchange of love. It's not based on material lust, but rather is an exchange of love between Krishna, the Lord himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his own internal pleasure potency. So therefore, when it says here that he was enjoying with his wives, there's nothing material about it. There's nothing like material lust in this world. Although materialistic people, they will criticize Krishna. Mm-hmm. And they will say, look, it is saying that he is enjoying with women at night time. But rather, Krishna is beyond the modes of material nature. He is actually the origin of the modes of material nature. And Krishna is fully situated in Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva means pure goodness. And similarly, his pleasure potency is also situated within pure goodness. Like that. So there should not be any doubt in our mind about Krishna's pastimes and his intention and his consciousness.
And actually, even in the first canto, 15th chapter or something, we read about all these things very detailedly, that Krishna's dealings with this woman was not like a material thing. He was never, there was no such thing at all. It was only pure love that saw it. I remember that part.
It's very pure and we cannot understand. It's extremely pure.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult for us to understand.
Yeah, not so easy to understand.
Very pure.
But it's not material.
Guruji, you said Krishna has 16,000 main wives. So when he was one, right? So how come he was able to expand himself into 16,000 and to give pleasure to all men?
What do you think?
Yeah, he can, but hey. I've never heard from devotees that 16,000 every night, something like that. Does he expand himself to 16,108 times?
No, he goes to one palace and the next time he goes to the next palace. And after 16,108 nights, and he goes back to the next one. So he sees them once every, say, 16 years or so. What do you think he does? Okay. Krishna expands himself. Right? This has already been explained. And if you read the purports, this has already been explained. Krishna expands himself into 16,108 Krishnas. In the morning time, he comes out of the palace, 16,108 palace, and he gets on 16,108 chariots. And 16,108 chariots, they drive to the Sudama Assembly Hall in Dwarka, where Krishna has his court. And when they all arrive, they all merge into one Krishna and one chariot. And then one Krishna gets off, goes into the assembly hall, and he spends all day in the court. And at the end of the day, he comes out, he gets on one chariot, and then as he drives off, he goes into 16,108 Krishnas, he goes into each and every palace.
So there's different activities. He also does different activities with Narada Maharaj, to see whether he's grown or that he's seen.
Yeah. But when Narada went into the palaces, Narada only had 9 forms, because he couldn't expand himself beyond 9.
Yeah.
So he only saw 9 at a time. But he saw in those 9, he was in a different pastime in every place. So then he estimated that Krishna must be in all of them simultaneously.
Yeah. Well, the other day you were talking about, in terms of preaching, because people say if Krishna enjoyed with the woman outside of his, in the night time with too many women, and I had a colleague at my workplace and he started the same thing, and then I just got an instruction, I made a point and he listened everything, and the same, he understood what I said, but looks like that was not good enough to change the heart. At the end of the day, means you can tell if we can win the argument, but it's difficult to change their heart. Because I told them, you haven't read this, so how can you jump to this conclusion?
Yeah. So it will take time. It will take time. Giving prasadam.
Okay.
That will help to purify his consciousness. But he needs association. The more association he gets, the more purified he can become. So ask him to come to the temple and come to the Bhakti Vriksha programs and like that. Try to purify it.
Mm.
It takes time. It's not easy to. Because they're very covered by the modes of nature. And they're performing impious activities. Bhagavatam says in the first canto, in the second chapter, that if you're performing impious activities in the lower modes of nature, then you cannot understand Krishna properly. You have to come to the mode of goodness and give up these simple activities to understand Krishna more properly, factually. Otherwise, it's not possible.
Because I started with them just because I know they are into all 4 regulative principles, they are breaking them. So I thought maybe in the lunchtime I can catch up with them and just say a little bit. What's happening is they eat meat next to me. So now I'm at a catch 22 situation. If I don't sit with them now, they know why I'm not sitting with them. So is it okay to sit with the people who are eating meat next to you?
This is the difficulty that everyone faces when you go into the material world. These are the kind of things that you have to face. Very difficult things. There's no, I can't say like do this or do not do that. When Prabhupada first came to America, he stayed in the Agarwal's house. He had to keep his bulgur, which he was using to cook and offer to Krishna, in the fridge where they also had meat. This is what it means when you come to this part of the world and these kind of things are going on. So it's very difficult like that. So we all have to deal with these things. Different devotees will deal with them in different ways.
It's mentioned in the book for this verse that the 16,008 expansions are 16 representations of the internal potencies. Whereabouts in Bhagavatam are those 16 potencies listed?
I'm not sure, but I would expect it would be in the 10th canto. In the commentaries, I think Krishna Chakravarti Thakur would mention. I think Prabhupada says something about the 10th canto, so that's where I would imagine.
Well, somebody told me somewhere, I read somewhere that like a 16,000 wife, they are like sages in Navisharanya and Lord Ramchandra's pastimes. They will have that relationship with the Lord and Lord said, I can't do anything because I'm only one, I have to have only one wife in this. Pastime and next life, his next pastime, he can maybe come and go.
It could be, but as far as I understand, the sages of Dandakaranya Forest, which is the ones you're speaking to, they became gopis in Vrindavan. So whether or not they became wives in Dwarka, I'm not sure. But I do know that many of them became gopis in Vrindavan. So I can't say. I do know they became gopis, many of them. So we'll keep moving, because we have to cover some more. Okay. The Lord was thus engaged in household life for many, many years, but at last his detachment from ephemeral sex life was fully manifested. So Krishna obviously was not engaged in ephemeral sex life. We've already established that in the previous two verses. Krishna was not engaged in material sex life like that. But in order to show an example for everyone in the material world, because in the material world, the main anatta, or the main attachment which everyone has in the material world, is to sex life, whether subtle or gross, right? Whether it's to the subtle attachment between man and woman, right? Or whether to the gross activity of sex life itself. So either way, this is the attachment which binds everyone in this material world. So Krishna showed at the end of his pastimes detachment of Vairagya. He renounced the world. Right? When the dynasty had been destroyed, when the Yadus had been destroyed, then Krishna, even previously, but at that time especially, Krishna entered into a very renounced temperament. And he went and sat under a banyan tree, right? And he went into a very renounced mood, like that. Vairagya, very detached from this world, like a sage. And describes when Uddhava came there to see him, and Maitreya came in to see him, and said that he was very grave and very peaceful. And describes he was just like a sadhu, or just like a sage or a rishi at that time. So he was in a very renounced mood. Of course, Krishna has no attachment anyway. But the example is showing us that at some point in life, we have to completely give up attachment to sex life. We have to give up attachment to enjoying with the opposite sex. Either subtly or grossly, or both, factually speaking. You have to give up your attachment to enjoying the opposite sex. Right? And this is what it takes in order to transcend this material nature. Like that. So Krishna showed us this example in his pastimes.
That the Lord is like the sun. So when in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that when millions and thousands of suns at once rise in the sky, it is the presence of the Supreme Person. And Krishna is like the sun. So even if like the sun will shine on everything, even the rivers and whatever, you know, any bad material also the sun shines on them. And similarly the wives, no, the more they associate with Krishna, the more they get purified.
Yeah.
It must be like that. Like the sun shining on them like that. It must be as pure as that.
Yeah.
Just wondering whether it's exemplified in him becoming detached from
sex life, because he goes to Prabhas and wipes out the yadus, and then that's it. He leaves as well. So where does it exemplify this, where he becomes detached from his wives and daughter?
Well, it's indicated within his mood at that time.
How long did he spend in Dwarka? Mm-hmm.
Dwarka is there for over
100 years, isn't it?
96 years or something.
He had grandchildren and then he manifested this mood or something. I just haven't read it before.
No, yeah, so then you could explain it that, you know, the Yadus had left. So then he didn't like think, oh well, you know, now I need another wife.
The others had left. So he left it. He left on that same day though. So where was the? That's what I'm asking.
Maybe on the same day, but he spoke the third and fourth canto to Uddhava and Maitreya. So I don't think it was a day. Unless he spoke the third and fourth canto in one day, which is.
So the manifestation was there at Prabhas. It wasn't with his families in Dwarka.
The wives went to a separate place. That's a way of explaining it then. Because when Krishna and the others left, Arjuna started taking the wives back to Hastinapur. So at the time when the others left, he didn't go back to the wives. So he showed an example of Vairagya. He didn't go back to the wives. He didn't get like involved in Grihastha life again. It was like, okay, this is the end. So the mood was there. He didn't have like a long sannyas period or. But he's the Lord, he doesn't need to.
Yeah, I was confused. I thought he was manifesting it while he was living in Dwarka with his family.
No, not at that time.
It was like an example that he was saying to Yudhishthir when they heard that Krishna left, he just left everything and he didn't look anymore upon the family.
Mm. Yeah, same mood. That's good. Once upon a time, great sages were made angry by the sporting activities of the princely descendants of the Yadu and Bhoja dynasties, and thus, as desired by the Lord, the sages cursed them. Every living entity is controlled by supernatural force, even the teacher.
We're just checking
that you're sleeping. Every teacher is controlled by supernatural force. I was controlled by Krishna. No. Okay, I'm sorry. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one, therefore, can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. So, as the verse says in a self-explanatory way, only a devotee can understand and accept Krishna's pastimes. Other people cannot accept or understand Krishna's pastimes. They can't understand how can he have so many wives and not be lusty. They cannot understand it. Because they try to see him from a mundane vision. You know, if any ordinary man, and Bhishma actually says, Bhishma, who was a Naishtika Brahmachari, Bhishma said, if I was dancing with the gopis, as Krishna was, in the middle of the night, right, with hundreds of thousands of beautiful girls, he said, my mind would become very disturbed. But Krishna's mind did not become disturbed at all, and this proves that he is transcendental. Is beyond the modes of material nature. Because Krishna's consciousness was not at all disturbed. Once upon a time, the great sages were made angry by the sporting activities of the princely descendants of the Yadu and Bhoja dynasties, and thus, as desired by the Lord, the sages cursed them.
Actually, one of the topics
of this. This one? Yeah. So this. A strong point which Prabhupada makes here in the purport is be very careful of Vaishnav Aparad. Do not offend Vaishnavas or Brahmanas. Prabhupada says this in the very last purport of this chapter. Be very careful how you deal with other devotees, and be very careful how you deal with Brahmanas. Like that. Be very careful like that. Because we see here there was no offence on the part of the princes of the Yadu dynasty because they, the Lord's eternal associates. You know, there was no offence like that. And there was no... the sages would not have acted angrily to the Lord's eternal associates. They would have respected them. But because it was the Lord's Yogamaya potency which covered everyone. But then Prabhupada points out in the purport, even though that was so, but still, it shows that even the Lord's eternal associates, if they offend a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, a sage, they will get reactions. So one must be very careful of offending devotees. Very careful.
Yeah.
We can go into that in more detail in, when this lesson comes up again another time. So. It's an interesting topic. A few months passed, and then, in order by Krishna, all the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja and Andaka, who were incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhas, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave, but remained in Dwarka. After arriving there, all of them took bath, and with water of the place of pilgrimage, they offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave cows to the brahmanas in royal charity. So Prabhupada makes an interesting point within the purport. He says that for a pure devotee who is fully engaged in devotional service, it's not necessary to go to a holy place to purify oneself. And Prabhupada said that about himself. He said, while he was preaching in America in 1976-77, Prabhupada said, if I die in New York City, then build a samadhi for me on the roof of the building and bury me there. Put me there in samadhi. Because they in New York at the time, the temple was a 13-story building. In New York. So Prabhupada said, because there's no land on the ground that the devotees own, so Prabhupada said, just put me in samadhi on the roof. He said, I have no sentiment to die in Vrindavan. Right? Because Prabhupada was a pure devotee. Prabhupada says in the purport, for a pure devotee, there's no necessity to purify himself by going to the holy places. Because he is a holy place himself. Because Krishna is within his heart. But for us who are sadhikas, Prabhupada says within the purport, we should visit the holy places to perform sadhana. In other words, to purify ourselves. That's why we go to Vrindavan, or we go to Mayapur, or we go to Puri. To purify ourselves, so that we will take on the purifying nature of the Holy Dham. Because the Holy Dham has very powerful energy, spiritual energy. And by associating with the Holy Dham, performing sadhana in those holy places, one also becomes purified and elevated to the platform of pure devotion. The brahmanas were not only given well-fed cows and charity, but also gold, gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skin, seats, blankets, horses, elephants, girls, and sufficient land for maintenance. So Prabhupada explains within the purport that this is the way Varnashram system is meant to operate and work. It is all based on cooperation between the classes. The brahmanas are meant to be respected. And here we see the kshatriyas are respecting the brahmanas. They're giving charity to the brahmanas. So this is the way the system would work. The brahmanas would not accept a wage. The king did not say, okay, you will get this much money every month. Rather, they gave them charity. And the brahmanas, being holy people, they would receive the charity, and whatever excess they have, they would then donate that in charity themselves. And they would teach spiritual knowledge to all the members of society. So we see here this is how the society would perfectly work. It says here that they also gave them girls. So this is not mean for sense gratification. This means that the brahmanas, because they're very spiritually focused, they may or may not have time to find a wife. So the kshatriyas and the vaishyas would organize for them to also get wives to marry. Like that. So if the brahmanas were too engaged in spiritual life but they required the assistance of a wife, a dharma patni, then at that time the kshatriyas and brahmanas, the kshatriyas and the vaishyas would make arrangements for them. So when it says girls, it doesn't mean like slaves or like that. It means properly Okay, the last verse. Thereafter they offered the Brahmanas highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground. They lived perfectly by protecting the cows and the Brahmanas. So what is, as it says here, highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead. What is that called? Harsha.
Salva.
Very good. There you go. You passed the test. This is called?
Mahaprasad.
This is called prasad. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that devotees should be very careful to only and always eat Mahaprasad. Food which has been first offered to Krishna and enjoyed by him. Because the opposite is enjoying pap. Right? It means that, as Krishna says within the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he explains that if you take food which has not been offered to the Lord in sacrifice, you eat sin. Right? There is a reaction for taking that foodstuff. And the reaction is that it will contaminate your consciousness, particularly if that foodstuff is being cooked by non-devotees. So if the non-devotee cooks, then their consciousness enters into that foodstuff. And if you take the foodstuff cooked by the non-devotee, your consciousness also becomes
contaminated.
Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says the mind becomes wicked. Mm. You know, it's very hard to think of Krishna. The mind will become polluted, contaminated. Mm. So Prabhupada points out in the purport, we should be very careful about this kind of situation. And in this final purport, did anyone read this final purport? One person? Two people? Very good. So for the other 28 of you, on that. Prabhupada points out, this purport is also very significant. Prabhupada points out that perfection of human life comes from three qualities or three situations. Prabhupada says, one must worship the cows and protect the cows. Right? This will give perfection in human life. The cows are protected and worshipped. Then Prabhupada says one must worship and protect Brahmanas. Right? If you give respect to the Brahmanas, right, protect them and respect them, your life will also become perfect. So you must protect cows and Brahmanas. And then Prabhupada says you must render pure devotional service. These three elements. He said this will give perfection in human life just by following these three things. Right? Protect and worship Brahmanas and cows and perform pure devotional service to Krishna, right? And your life will become perfected. Right? You will attain perfection in this human form of life.
Oh, it's very difficult to find cows today.
Yeah, so it means that we have to at least follow the principle of cow protection. We should not eat the cow like that. I mean, this is better if you can protect the cow, look after the cow. But if you can't, we live in the city and we preach and everything. But at least we do not eat the cow.
Okay.
And at least we support, in whatever way we can, cow protection. In other words, like in Vrindavan and Mayapur, we have goshalas. And in our farm, we have some cows being protected. So at least we should support that activity to whatever degree we can. So Prabhupada makes these basic points in the purport.
With the Brahmanas protection, are we talking about protecting the disciple succession here? Because in the modern age, what can be done? No, there are no Brahmanas.
Not so many. It's true. But the point is that the Brahmanical culture must be there. Like that. So especially the devotees within the temple, what we generally we call full-time devotees, then they should be, or by and large, the majority of them should be Brahmanical. So the duty of the Grihastha community, the congregate, what we call the congregational community, should be to support those devotees, so that they can just concentrate on studying the Shastra and teaching it to others. So that is supporting the Brahmanas. Of course, it's not so well developed in Kali Yuga. But in the previous times, that was fully developed. The Vaishyas and Kshatriyas fully maintain the Brahmanas. So the Brahmanas don't have any anxiety. They can just teach and preach. And then everything goes very nicely. In Kali Yuga, it doesn't operate so nicely.
In 17th chapter of Gita, Krishna says that the austerity of body consists of worshipping the Supreme Lord Brahmanas So that is how we have to use this body to worship the Brahmanas and the elderly people like father, mother, worship of the Supreme Lord, that is the first thing. So that is what you mean, worship of Brahmanas and the Supreme Lord.
There are three types of, they say that there are three types of lone-like things for the person who is a material person who is following the Vedic culture. One is the Devarin. Devarin means the thing for the demigods, the offerings for the demigods. Pitrurin, the offerings for the forefathers and ancestors. And Rishirin. Rishirin means the charity and everything for the Brahmanas. Unless they do these three, they cannot leave this mortal body. So when Arjuna's father Pandu, he wanted to atone for some shab that the one rishi gave, and he wanted to go to Brahmaloka with rishis. And the rishi says that because you don't have he didn't have children at the time, they said you cannot come to Brahmaloka with us because you didn't fulfill the pitrurin. You are not done for the forefathers. You don't have a son to fulfill the pitrurin. So you have to go back to Earth. You know?
Yeah, that's it. But then the Bhagavatam says, I think in the fifth canto, that one who is a one who is a devotee of Krishna, pure devotee, then one has no debt to any other forefather or demigod or anything like that. There's no debt.
Not for people.
Yeah. Okay. So on Monday night we'll begin chapter 4. I think the homework is verses 1-16 from memory. So we'll continue there. Shri Prabhupada ki.